This is the Mobile Tech Podcast, brought to you by worldpodcasts.com. Now here's your host, Tech Girl Miriam Joie.
Brought to you by Audible. Stay tuned for a special offer at the end of the show. Hi, and welcome to the Mobile Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Miriam Joar, and today is Thursday, June 16th, 2022, and I have once again the excellent Nick Gray of Fandroid with me. Hi, Nick. How are you?
I am doing excellent. Thank you for having me on again. It's always a pleasure.
Of course. We're going to have a lot to talk about this week. We've had a few weeks of relatively calm news. But now it's like, I don't know, just a lot of rumors, a lot of leaks, a lot of stuff happening. I guess it's summer phone time coming up, right?
Yeah, it's one of those things. We get into these lulls for a month, month and a half, and then it seems like the heavens open up and everything comes to us all at once, and just trying to keep our heads above water sometimes.
Well, so the good news is that some good stuff in here. I did miss this last week, so I really want to touch on it briefly. Ed Hardy was my guest from Cult of Mac, and we had a lot to talk about with the MacBook Air M2, but we did forget to talk about the Type-C mandate, I guess, that Europe finally went ahead with. So all devices will have to have a Type-C, a USB Type-C connection starting next year, 24, I think, or that's like 2 years from now. And then the laptops, they can take a little longer to get there. But honestly, to me, this is good news. What do you think?
Well, I think it's about time. I think anyone who knows the European Union and their impetus to make things better and easier for consumers, they finally said USB-C is the way to go. And a while back, they had this kind of softer mandate for the adoption of USB connections, where all OEMs had to give up their proprietary connections and move to USB. And there was, you know, mini, micro, and then, you know, USB-C coming further down the road. But for some reason, Apple wasn't included in that, and they were not as enforced heavily as what they're planning to do with this, which means we are finally going to go to a universal connection for pretty much everything, which is, I don't know, pretty amazing to me. The one thing that gets me, though, is that there's for other devices, as you mentioned, laptops and stuff can trail a little bit further behind, but this isn't going to affect like webcams and
I thought it was everything. I thought it was earbuds and headphones and a bunch. Is there a list?
It's for mobile electronics.
Okay.
It's not necessarily, so like I have one of Lenovo's smart clocks that has a Qi charger on it, but the connection is a regular DC. I forget, you know,
like a cylinder,
seven millimeter. Yeah. And things like that. Your home electronics aren't going to be affected by this. It's going to be mobile electronics, which is affected, why the distinction? I don't know. Let's make it all universal. But it's nice to see, at least we're moving in the right direction. It would be nice if the US would step in and help push these standards as well, but we know the US doesn't ever like dictating anything like this.
No, that's socialism, don't you know?
You know, sometimes socialism is a little bit better than free will.
Exactly. I don't even think of it as socialism. I just think of it as just common sense, honestly, at this point. And, you know, here's what I'm hoping is going to happen. These other devices that are not mandated, because the price of the circuitry is going to drop so drastically, it's already lower now, but because everyone's going to adopt it, it's going to drop even more in price. The electronic makers are just going to put it on everything, right? Because it's economies of scale. If they're building this device, they already have that charging circuit or their power circuit from another device, they're going to be like, why redesign a custom coax connector for our clock when we have off the shelf this USB-C solution we use on a third of our devices, you know?
Yeah, it's funny because like I have a USB powered
blender. Toothbrush. I have a blender, actually.
A blender. Yeah,
a car blender.
But is your blender, it's probably micro USB?
No, it's USB-C and it has battery. USB-C? So it's actually battery powered. I don't think you can run it while it's charging, but it's chargeable by USB-C, which is really awesome.
But the flip side, I have a smart electric toothbrush that comes with Bluetooth and app integration and tells you which teeth you missed, but it uses micro USB.
Duh.
And it's like, I have to pull out a random cable every 3 weeks to charge this toothbrush because that's the only thing in the house that uses micro USB, which I don't know. Like, this is the thing. This is the issue they're trying to solve.
Exactly.
With this, which means you can reuse the cables that you have. You don't have to have different cables for different things. And specifically for iPads and iPhones, everything coming to the same connection is going to be a good thing for consumers.
I absolutely think so. And, you know, for those who think they're going to stifle innovation, it's not, because, you know, you can still have a USB-C port on your device and still have a MagSafe port on your MacBook Air M2. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's a thing. Also, you know, for Apple, I think this is what's going to happen. I'm calling it now. When they switch to this, to match this mandate, we're going to see them drop the USB-C port from the phone completely, or the Lightning port completely, and they're going to switch to MagSafe, magnetic, wireless charging like they have now. And literally in the box will be a small little MagSafe puck with USB-C on it. You see what I'm saying?
I don't think it would. They probably won't even give you the MagSafe puck. Like, you'll have to buy it as an accessory.
Okay, whatever. The point is I'm making is that that's they're going to basically comply with a mandate, you know, by making a puck with a USB-C socket on it. And that's what you have to either optionally buy, or at least for the first version of the phone, it'll be in the box like they've done in the past.
So here's, I've had this conversation with a couple people, and I honestly think that's years away still, simply because of not the charging issue, but more of the connectivity issue for debugging a device like a smartphone, or installing software updates, or simply taking it to somebody to have it repaired. Having a physical connection is so much more reliable than having a wireless connection, where, you know, just trying to connect a device to a PC to do some
debugging.
But
look at the Apple Watch. It has a debug port underneath. If you take off the, at least, I don't know if the current ones do, but the original Apple Watch, if you took off the band, there was a little sealed port you could get to at 4 pins underneath the part where you click in the band.
But that would require Apple to re-engineer things and add a different port than a USB-C port, right?
I mean, it could add the same port as the debug port on the watch. It's their port. They're only using it for debugging and factory use.
I don't know.
All I'm saying is,
from a consumer standpoint, I think that's a negative.
Right? I agree.
From a consumer standpoint, it's a negative. I want to plug in my phone to transfer photos and files and be able to, like, even though Apple does that really well wirelessly, it's definitely not as fast as what you can do wired when you're connecting to a PC.
I know, but Apple users don't care about this.
Nah,
you and I
know.
Care about this, and that's why we use Android phones.
But it's when I use my iPhone that I want to do this, do my camera comparisons and things like that.
You know.
Imagine transferring 8K video files wirelessly to a PC. Like, this is going to take forever.
That's why Wi-Fi 7 will solve everything, don't you know?
Yeah, that's in another 4 years.
Okay, so let's switch to the next thing, is your Red Magic 7 Pro review. I have the phone here. I've played with it a little. I haven't really had much time with it. I reviewed the Red Magic 7 for Hot Hardware a while back. You didn't even mention the cameras in your review. Actually, your review feels like...
My review did not mention the cameras because that is not what this phone is about.
I know, but it does have an under-display camera. For a gaming phone, that's a little unique, because that could be a really big mess, right? Because you have an area of the display that's not as good.
You know what? So I should have mentioned it. But the thing is, I didn't even notice it.
And okay.
I knew it was there. I totally knew it was there, but I didn't use the phone once for taking a selfie. And the fact that for me, it didn't even matter. Like, I gave this phone glowing reviews besides the cameras or anything.
Yeah.
And I honestly didn't notice the camera under the display one time.
So
that's how good the technology is right now. But that being said, I don't know how good the selfies were from that camera, because that was not the approach of my review. It was, this is a smartphone completely built for a singular experience, and that experience is to give you the maximum performance possible out of, you know, Qualcomm's latest chipset, and it delivered with more than what I was expecting. So,
oh yeah. And the 7 is just the same. Honestly, the only thing you lose is the under display camera. I mean, there's really not a huge difference. My takeaway here is that this under display setup is the same as the ZTE Axon 40 Ultra, which is getting mixed reviews. Some people are taking some decent selfies. Some people are taking some very questionable selfies. And I got a feel that it really depends on the background lighting, how clean the display is, a bunch of things. But in terms of the main cameras, it's going to be the same as a Red Magic 7, which is basically, again, I hate to use Moto as a baseline, but it's about Moto level of
Moto quality.
You know, the bare minimum acceptable, maybe passable. But look, I'm just bringing that up because I wasn't sure if somehow your review hadn't, like, had been truncated somehow or was missing another page.
When I was sitting down to write this review, and after having the phone for about 3 weeks, I was writing the review, and I put a header in there for cameras because I have my standard, you know, formatting for my reviews. And I have my template there, and I got the camera. I was like, I'm not writing about the camera because I literally have not used the camera on this phone at all, because that's not the point of this phone, right?
Like, no.
And I debated whether I should go out and do some camera tests and everything else. And it's like, screw it, because that's not why you buy this phone. You buy this phone because of its performance. Cameras, Red Magic has never had great cameras. It's never had bad cameras.
No.
And like, I would say, as you said, Motorola type quality, which is kind of like mid, but lower mid, right?
Yeah.
It's not bad. You know, there's always room for improvement. So I was perfectly happy to say, you know, this is my review and I'm not even touching the cameras, because I literally used the phone for 3 weeks and did not launch camera app.
That's amazing. Time. No, that's right? Totally like, fair.
But I was completely happy with the phone without even taking pictures.
Back in the day when I wrote for Android Police part-time, I wrote a review on should you buy, it was I think the Red Magic 3 at the time, should you buy the Red Magic 3 and use it as a flagship? Because the specs were flagship worthy, and I'm like, how, you know, you could save money because it's a really affordable phone. Like, same with this, like the 7 and the 7 Pro are very affordable. If you want the latest specs, but you're not a gamer necessarily, you can get a really nice phone all around. So I actually asked that question and wrote an article, because I didn't use it as a gaming phone. I tried to just use it as a normal phone. And the takeaway was, yeah, you know, with caveats. I mean, it's not designed for that, but at the same time, it is a phone. It does all the things a phone does, and it does them okay. But my takeaway was that, yes, you're saving money. Yes, you're getting the specs and the performance, but the software is what always seems to be Red Magic. And in general, Nubia / ZTE's downfall, in my opinion, right?
You know, honestly, I don't dislike their software like I dislike software from, say,
it was just buggy.
Xiaomi or even Samsung. Yes, it is buggy, but they typically have a clean user experience. Like, their skin isn't overbearing. You get kind of that traditional Android experience. They have some flourishes on top. Specifically, Red Magic, the last couple years, I think starting with last year, they've added so many of their own custom widgets that are specifically built with that gamer theme to them, giving you controls over the fan, the LED lights, showing you the temperature on the inside of the phone, things like that, things that gamers are definitely interested in. And they have this cool, unique feel to them. So I think, like, yes, they could do some more work to fix some of the bugs, but as far as the experience itself as to what they are trying to deliver, I think they actually do a good job without getting into their own way, without giving you too many customization options or a user interface that's overbearing when all you really want to do is, you know, launch some apps or put some widgets on the home screen, right? So I think they do deserve some credit there. The downside is they're typically not the best and the fastest as far as delivering updates to their devices.
Yeah, that's a big issue.
I mean, you have to balance things out on both ends. But I honestly, like, I launched the phone, I add a couple widgets to the home screen, and I'm good to go. And unlike a lot of other devices where I'm just waiting a couple days to use the phone before installing a custom launcher on top of
it. Yeah, you have to do some cleanup before you freaking use the phone.
Yeah, and on this phone and Red Magic's devices and even ZTE's devices, I don't feel that neat. So I do give them some props on that end. But yes, there are bugs here and there, especially with some of their gaming stuff, because they are trying to optimize a lot of the hardware with their software, and you run into issues there all the time.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're looking for an affordable gaming phone, this is your ticket. And more importantly, it's pretty well spec'd. So, you know, check it out. Speaking of gaming phones that are relatively well spec'd and coming to global markets and possibly affordable too, the Black Shark 5 and 5 Pro have been launched by, I guess, Xiaomi, right?
By Xiaomi, yeah. I mean, they're saying it's a separate brand, but come on.
We know better. So what's your take on these? I mean, it's just a news story on Fandroid. I'm going to link to it in the show notes, folk. I know they look good. I don't know. I like the way they look. They don't look too gamey. They kind of look like normal phones that have gamified a bit.
Well, I think the regular, the non-pro looks a little bit more toned down, but there's a version of the pro version that looks very modular and very gamer-esque, which I do like the look and feel of these devices, because honestly, like, we get so many phones that look the same.
I know.
Anytime that you can add some variety to the design of the phone, I'm all for that, as long as it doesn't get away of the usability of the device. But with that being said, a lot of people will say, well, I don't want my phone to look like that. So you'll have both ends of the spectrum, right? So if you're into the look, fine. If not, but as far as the specs go, there's the regular one that has the Snapdragon 870, which is the toned down version of, well, it's the
65 plus.
It's yes, correct. The 65 plus. So technically a 2 year oldish chipset.
It's still
point,
better at thermals than the 888 though. But
that's what I was going to say. It is so much better at the thermals than the Snapdragon 888, so much so that on a couple of these devices that we saw a lot of these last year and also earlier this year,
there's still more coming out all the time.
Because this chipset is so good.
I know.
Because after 10 minutes of gaming, the Snapdragon 870 performs just as good, if not better, than the 888 under heavy usage.
Or the 8 Gen 1, for that matter.
No, the 8 Gen 1 actually still performs. It still outperforms
The 870?
Yeah, okay. The 870 by a good 20-30% under max throttle for a lot of these devices. So the 8 Gen 1 is definitely a step up. The phone's going to be hot as hell.
But the 8 Gen 1 does throttle still, like the 888
yes,
did.
Yes, it does throttle, but its base numbers are so much higher that even under full throttle, its full throttle numbers are still going to be 20-30% better than what you get out of the 870 from my benchmark experience and even playing games looking at the FPS. But this phone's going to be really good. I mean, the price is going to be right at $550-ish.
Yeah.
And with a base of 8 gigabytes of RAM. But then there's, you know, if you want to go all in, you can get the Snapdragon 8 Gen 1 with the Pro version. And that comes with 12 gigabytes of RAM at the base level. But the price is going to bump up to $800.
And that puts you in Red Magic 7 Pro territory, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be a one-to-one comparison with the 7 Pro from Red Magic. And I think, I don't know, like, the difference here is that you actually get not capacitive trigger buttons on the side, but you get physical trigger buttons.
Yeah.
And I do like that. Mm-hmm. I like if you're looking for that tactile feedback.
Are they still electric and raise out, or like they did for a while?
I'm not sure how they're going to be implementing these, because they've done a couple different variations. They've done mechanical raise up, and then they've done magnetic that lock them in. So not sure how the implementation is going to be here. I should have my device within the next couple weeks, so hopefully we'll have an answer for that. But the only downside to this phone that I see is the battery size at 4,650, which it's not bad, but the Red Magic took it up to 5,000 milliamp hours, which, you know, when you're having a gaming-centric device like this, the more battery, the better.
Yep, 100%. Speaking of kind of segueing into another phone that has another variant that's a gaming phone. The Poco F4 GT is a gaming phone that was announced a little while ago. And there are rumors of a Poco F4 5G coming out, which is not a gaming phone, but has similar specs. And we're starting to see some teases from Poco. So this would be the Poco flagship, folks, this year. You know, so far we really haven't had a flagship. The X4 Pro 5G, which is the last kind of mid-range-ish Poco to come out, it came out at MWC, is a pretty decent phone, but it's not going to get you too excited, you know, with a Snapdragon 695. Whereas this thing, we don't know the specs, but I assume this is going to be something...
The rumors are it's going to be a Snapdragon 870.
Yeah. Again.
So it's going to be a good performing device. Again, just like Black Shark, Poco is technically no longer
yes, right?
A Xiaomi brand, but it is. So I would say this is very, very similar to what we're going to see what we're going to see with the Black Shark 5 as far as the specifications go. The difference here is that you're not going to get the gamer-centric UI and the look and feel, but also they're probably going to do a lot more with the cameras on this device because they know people are going to care more about that on this phone than they would on Black
Shark.
Yeah,
there's rumors this might actually come with OIS, so I'm actually excited about that. And then the other thing is, you know, the Redmi K40 series, you know, the K series from Redmi has always kind of shown you where the Pocos are going to go or the other way around. Same with the, you know, the Note series. The Note 11 Pro 5G is the exact same phone as the Poco X4 Pro 5G. So it's just cosmetically different, but the ports are in the same place, the holes, everything, just a different camera bump. Specs are identical. So I think this is going to be a rehash of one of the K40 series. But look, I'm sure the price will be great. I like the Poco phones. I don't like Xiaomi software as much, but I can live with it. You know, another launcher and you're generally good to go, right?
Yeah, and I honestly haven't played... No, I have. I was going to say I haven't played with one of their phones that's running Android 12 yet, but one of my devices was upgraded to Android 12, and there wasn't really much of a difference on the software front.
No.
Hopefully later this year, they'll kind of rethink things. I don't know. It's gotten really bloated with Xiaomi software.
Yeah, it's not great.
And I don't know what it is, because for years... I love their software, just the simplicity of the software and their light skin on top of Android and the customizations that they had. And then I would say the last 2 years, things have taken a turn for the worst as far as, you know, bloat and the heaviness of the software experience that just gets in the way of, you know, just using the device sometimes.
Yeah, I agree. But what's more exciting than all this is Nothing, which... We'll be launching the Phone 1 on July 12th. We covered that last week. But they finally teased the back of the phone. Now we know what the back of the phone looks like. And frankly, we know what the front's going to look like. Just another slab with a hole.
It's going to look like a phone.
Right? So now we kind of have most of the phone. So, you know, my team at Pocket Now wrote about this and a bit of an opinion editorial piece related to this. And I encourage you to read it. I'll put it in the show notes. But I don't know. How do you feel about this?
Well, so from the original images that they shared on social media, it looked pretty plain. But I don't know if you saw late last night, there was an event in Switzerland where people saw the device in person.
Oh, I missed that.
And we'll get you some pictures later on. But so there's a bunch of different lights, LED lights that are built into the back of the phone. And they were showing them lighting up in different light up patterns with it.
Well, we saw that, remember, one of that weird hieroglyphical thing that we saw months ago.
That outline is essentially where the lights are.
And there's, you see it on the back of this. If you look carefully, it's a little wider in those areas.
You can see it. Yeah. So they're LED lights, but they're not bright enough to brighten up a room, simply to brighten up the back of the phone, which I think they're going to be using for notifications, things like that. A lot of if you've been using Android for years, you probably miss how OEMs have gone away from putting an LED light on the front of the phone for notifications and charging notifications, things like that, where you could customize the LED light to flash blue or red or yellow for different things. The fact that they're putting in some extra effort to add these lighting systems to the back of this phone gives me an idea that you're going to be able to customize these in some way for your own personal needs. Like if you get a phone call, it lights up in a certain way, or if you're getting a text message, it lights up in a different way.
I'm actually calling it now. The Nothing Phone 1 is a gaming phone with a Snapdragon 870. Sorry.
Could be.
I'm joking. But you know, there's LED lights on the back, so it's a gaming phone.
We know it's supposed to be a mid-range chipset, right? So it's not going to be a Snapdragon 8 Gen 1. And
I think it's
going to
be the 7 Gen 1. That's what I'm calling right now.
It could be. But the Snapdragon 870 is so cheap. It's showing up in $500 phones. Like if this phone costs, we're expecting it probably to be around $500. Mm-hmm. If it's that price point, it better be the 870 rather than the 7 Gen 1, because the 870 is a lot more powerful than the 7 Gen 1.
I agree, but I'm feeling like Carl is very tight with, you know, Qualcomm, and they're going to want him to use the newest.
Push the new chip.
Right?
Yeah.
And you know, you notice the 765G was on everything, and still, I mean, Pixel 5a last year still had it. That's like a two-year-old chip.
This is true.
And it still works great. So I think that we haven't really had a 7 series Snapdragon matching the 888 series that was popular. It existed. There's a, you know, there's a 780 and a 778, but we never saw those in wide use. I think in great part because of the 870, as you said. Mm-hmm. But I think that they're going to try to push the 7 Gen 1. And so this might be one of the first phones with it.
To do it, yeah. Yeah, I am kind of disappointed because they talked about this transparent design, which technically this has, but I think we were all expecting a little bit more as far as seeing the internals of the phone rather than just an internal structure of the phone. So they've essentially behind, I don't know if it's glass or acrylic, they've highlighted different camera or different areas of the device, like the camera module and where the processor is and the wireless charging coils, things like that, but without actually showing them to us. So I'm a little bit disappointed on that end because I was expecting more like real internals of the device, kind of like what we got on the earbuds. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. What's your take on the look?
I like it. I mean, I like the Ear One earbuds, the way they looked. So this is encouraging. I'm more, you know, kind of like wondering what the specs are going to be at this point, because I'm kind of hoping for a repeat of the original Nord, you know, $500-ish OIS on the main lens, a proper decent chipset, wireless charging. And then, you know, of course, the CalPay software kind of, I don't want to call it magic, but gimmickiness. I don't know. Like, yeah, you know, it could be could go either way here. But the bottom line is, yeah, I'm excited. Look, I think this is gonna be interesting. I welcome it. I'm more of a look and see, kind of wait and see, feel it out, look it out, vibe right now about it. That's how I feel.
What would you say? So we have the Pixel 6a right around the corner, right?
Right.
With Google's camera technology, with the new, well, not the new, but Google's own flagship tier chipset from last year, and prices, you know, supposed to be more competitive maybe than what this is. We don't know the final price of this phone yet.
Right.
What would your take be on someone looking to buy one or the other? Where would you put your money?
I think if you're a fashionista and you want something cool and different, you're going to buy this phone. And if you want a functional phone that does everything well, you're going to buy a Pixel 6a.
Yeah.
Sorry, but I don't know if this might be a very functional phone that does everything well. I hope it is, but I'm not.
It could
not
be. No, I'm definitely hoping that it is.
Yes. But my gut feeling is if you're a bit more square, you're going to buy the Pixel because you don't want to take risks. And you know you're going to get the goods from Google.
Yeah, you know what you're getting when you're buying a Pixel device.
Whereas, you know, is nothing going to deliver the software updates? I mean, they say they will, but will they? Like, you know what I'm saying? Google will, mm-hmm. guaranteed. So there's all kinds of things like that. But, you know, I don't know. I think that they're really marketing this as, you know, like the fact that there are, you know, you sent me the link to the thing. It's Art Basel. It's like this kind of like really upscale, you know, event that happens in Switzerland every year. The fact that they're there doing something, it's totally about, you know, like this is a phone that influencers are going to carry and show off, but never really use because they're going to be using their iPhone 13s. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep. But even so, like we thought that of, say, the Moto Razr, right? The you know, the foldable display and, you know, the Galaxy Z Fold. And while they do make a fashion statement, I still never see them in the wild.
That's my point. I mean, you see the Galaxy Z Flip in the wild. That's the one I see the most.
Yeah.
And you see that in the hands of more, no, like, not necessarily fashionistas. It's more like, I more think normals. This is cool. Yeah. And I think in that sense, Samsung has really achieved something special, you know, and I've never seen.
Well, I think the thing was with the Fold 3 was the price was right. Like,
oh yeah.
The previous generations, the prices were not right. And that was my point of bringing up the Pixel 6a that's coming out, because it's going to have flagship tier processor versus a mid-range tier processor.
And
on
I could
this
be
phone.
Wrong. Maybe it does have an 870, and 870 is still more of a flagship than the 7 Gen 1. So
yeah, but I mean that would be my main concern is, you know, here's, you know, maybe a really solid mid-range device versus another mid-range device with Google's camera technology and Google's own, you know, flagship tier chipset on the inside. That it's not even a comparison, right?
No, exactly.
And that's where I'm kind of feeling where this might miss the mark a little bit. Everything else about it, I would say I'm extremely excited about, though. I do, like, I have my reservations, disappointed a little bit about the design. I don't not like it. I was expecting something a little bit different.
Yeah, I don't like the rounded corners. I just feel like, you know, a lot of people have said if you take away the transparency and the layers under there, it just looks like an iPhone 10. It kind of does. And yeah, that's true. And that's a little disappointing. I was expecting, you know, something more funky, like the fact that the iPhone 13 today, not the Pro, has a diagonal layout for the lenses in the back.
Yeah,
it's unique. It's different. It's cool. And, you know, we've seen other phones do some cool stuff, like, I don't know, stacking two cameras vertically or even horizontally. It's just kind of boring. Like, why didn't they make it so one camera is one end and the other camera on the other end? Like, that would have been really different. Like, looks like a creature with two eyes or something. Like, I don't know.
Or put the camera right in the middle, right where the center of the charging coil is.
No, but I'm thinking more actually along the lines of, you know how we've had center camera pods that are vertically aligned? Remember, yep. OnePlus 8 series?
Oh, yeah. A lot of devices from two or three years ago.
You know, there's only very few phones that have center, top center, but horizontally aligned. Like centered.
Pixel.
Yeah. No, I'm thinking more like the Asus Zenfone 6. It had the flippable thing. But, you know, the cameras are side by side, but in the middle.
Right in the middle.
Not vertically aligned, but horizontally aligned. So something like that, I think, would be interesting.
HTC did it for years.
Correct.
Lot of their devices.
HTC did that. TCL did something similar with 4 or 5 lenses there for a while. You know, I don't know. This really does reek of iPhone overall. And I just feel like, come on. This is teenage engineering working
with.
At
this point, though, like, a camera placed on the back of the phone is a camera placed on the back of the phone. We can't say it looks like an iPhone.
This is a design-focused company. They're making something unique, and they didn't actually change the basic layout of the phone?
I don't know. That's a question for, we'll have to, like, get Carl
okay,
Pei on here.
Remember when the Ear Ones came out, the earbuds from nothing? They look like, the case looks like nothing else.
Completely different, yeah.
This looks like something else. In that sense, I think I'm not that excited about it. Now, don't get me wrong. Transparency, all that's super cool, especially if that rear is glass.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it will be. I think it'll be the same super nice polycarb we have on the Nothing case, which means It might it better scratch.
Not. That'll scratch. That will. My nothing case is completely scratched up.
I know mine is too. That's why I'm like, wait, maybe not. Maybe it is
they can
glass.
They can make it Gorilla Glass. There's no reason but why they can't make curved, it Gorilla
right?
Glass.
But it needs to be curved, right? It needs to be curved onto the sides, right?
It doesn't have to be, no.
Well, to match.
It doesn't look like it's curved. It's,
to match
it's,
the earbuds.
It goes all the way. Well, I don't know. We'll have to wait until we finally get one, right? So we have what? The launch is July 12th.
Yeah.
So we still have 3.5-4 weeks.
Yeah.
It's going to be a long time to wait.
The fact that we're talking this much about it, you know, achievement unlocked, right? Like, I just.
Oh, completely.
You know. Like
they know what they're doing in the marketing department.
I'm not mad about it, but I'm also not mad about it. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I'm kind of like, let's look at how it pans out. Let's wait and see. Let's, you know, see what happens. Speaking of CarPay and nothing, that can segue us easily into OnePlus. OnePlus 10 Pro came out with a 12 gig, 256 gig option. I believe it's coming yesterday. So it came out on Wednesday. We're now Thursday. By the time you get this podcast, it'll be the weekend. You can now buy a proper OnePlus 10 Pro, not this gimped 8 gigabyte, 128 gigabyte version.
I would say get the 8 gigabyte version.
Yeah, it's enough.
I haven't had any issues with it.
The problem is storage, right? It's not really the RAM. I'm not worried about the RAM either, but...
You know, honestly, I don't know. I back everything up to Google Photos.
Yeah, I know.
Original quality. And so the storage issue never comes into play. I bought my Pixel 6 Pro and I bought the 128 gig version. So I don't know. Like, unless you're installing a lot of games and don't have cloud backup for your images, it could be an issue. But I'm still of the... Honestly, I don't know. Looking at the price, though, it's only $70 more. So double the storage and get an extra 4 gigs of RAM for $70. Yeah, that doesn't sound too bad.
Yeah, as I said,
I'm torn.
I'm just happy they did it. They actually held their promise.
Oh, yeah, they should have had it from day one.
Yes.
Like, I just don't understand. I don't know.
Supply issues.
Supply shortage issues.
Yeah, 100%.
But, I mean, come on. You're It's OnePlus, which is now Oppo. Like, you shouldn't have supply shortage issues on
it's
storage
like,
and RAM.
You know, I just moved to Canada part-time, and I can't find the couch from IKEA I want. It's completely in a black hole of supply madness. So I'm just going to have to wait. It's just, you know what? I just put my patience pants on. I think this supply stuff is just way more intense than we think about. And
this is true.
And I'm... not sure that OnePlus was specifically trying to be obtuse by not launching both versions at the same time here. I really feel like, you know, they did it as soon as they could and here we are kind of thing.
Well, but you remember the original launch, like it launched originally just in China and we had to wait another
couple months. Yeah, that was a botched thing. I hope they learned their lesson. It completely diluted our enjoyment and experience of this phone,
mm-hmm.
right? Hopefully they took that feedback.
By the time we got it brand new in the box, it was 2.5 months old.
Yeah.
So.
And we knew everything about it because it'd been reviewed by people who imported it from China.
Mm-hmm.
So speaking of which, there are more leaks of the OnePlus 10/10T, which is the non-pro version with the Snapdragon 8 Gen 1 Plus, no, 8 Plus Gen 1. And I mean, I don't know. What do you think of that? Like, do you care? I don't even care at this point. It won't have Hasselblad branding, apparently.
Apparently, it's not having the Hasselblad branding. The cameras are going to be different. There's going to be a macro camera on the back.
Oh, you know that's going to be crap.
Well, of course.
The fact that they're specifying
that. 2 megapixels at that.
Well, okay. Let's just aside. Xiaomi did some 5-megapixel macros with autofocus on some phones that didn't suck, like the Xiaomi 11 or Mi 11 back then because it had the Mi naming.
Mm-hmm.
And even the Redmi Note 10 Pro last year, the last year's affordable 4G Redmi Note had a 5-megapixel with autofocus macro that wasn't too horrible.
As long as it has the autofocus, though,
exactly.
That's the
Moto
thing.
Also did 5-megapixel autofocus macros on a few of their phones. And of course, the problem with Moto is that they can't make an imaging stack to save their lives in terms of software. But if you continue putting 2 megapixel fixed focus macros at f over 2.4 on your phone,
just stop it.
That's generally a BBK group thing. If you're listening, folks at, you know, this is Realme, Oppo, OnePlus, the whole shebang, stop it. As Nick said,
just stop
quit it.
Like, just don't put it on
don't
there.
Don't bother.
It's completely useless. Like, I want to, like, they have the stats on how often the cameras are used, right? Like, they have those numbers. I want to say that the 2 megapixel macro cameras, or the macro cameras on any smartphone, is the least used camera ever and the most useless camera ever to be put on a phone. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, it's probably used
less
than... Is
it more useless than the monochrome? I think the monochrome they have is also there.
Well, they use the monochrome... I forget if they're...
They say they do.
They use the monochrome to help enhance the colors of the regular camera. So
yeah,
technically, it's being used for every shot. But I would say the 2 megapixel macro camera is used less than those 2 megapixel depth sensors. Like, people are taking more portrait mode shots than they are taking macro shots.
Okay, fair enough. Yep.
So, but even those, like, you don't even need those portrait depth sensors anymore, because you can do it with computational photography.
Or if you need one, use the ultra wide. I mean,
or use the ultra wide. Yeah, exactly.
Anyway,
so many issues.
Oh yeah, I want to skip forward to the Vivo stuff because it's in BBK land here.
Mm-hmm.
Vivo has, you know, rumors of an X80 Pro Plus. Surprise! I've got the X80 Pro here, and oh my god, that camera system is just possibly one of the best I've ever used.
I'm jealous because I have not used one yet.
It is bonkers. I mean, right now I have a few phones here that are bonker cameras. The Honor Magic 4 Pro, of course. There is the Sony Xperia 1 Mark IV. I have that as well. Bonkers in a different way. The Vivo X80 Pro regular. But this is a rumor of a Pro Plus with a Snapdragon 8 Plus Gen 1 potentially. I'm not surprised. They've been making a Pro Plus versions of these phones for the last two gens. And they're pumping out new X series phones every 3 to 4 months right now. We got the 60 and the 70 last year. So that's a lot of flagships, because there's always a regular Pro and a Pro Plus. So of course there's going to be an 80 Pro Plus, X80 Pro mm-hmm. Plus. But the question is, what is going to bring to the table? Because the X80 Pro, as it is right now, is just a beast. So...
I mean, so for as far as the specifications go, it should match everything on the regular Pro, except it's going to have the new Snapdragon 8 Plus Gen
right.
1. So pushing performance up a little bit while also reducing power consumption.
And 120 watt charging, I think, is the other thing that doesn't have.
Does the regular one not have 120?
I think it's 80, but I could be wrong.
Okay.
I need to look it up.
I mean, honestly, like, the difference between 80 and 120, while it might sound a lot like a lot, it's really only like 4 minutes charging time difference on a device.
Once you're at over 66, you're good.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, if you're over 50, you're good.
Yeah, pretty much.
But, no, and so I think we're going to be seeing a lot of BBK group phones being released or re-released with the Snapdragon 8 Plus Gen 1. And I think what a lot of people need to realize is that while it is the same Snapdragon 8 Gen 1 name, the Plus is based off of, Samsung's not making it. It's
TSMC.
TSMC. And so the architecture of the chipset itself is different, and that's why they're able to pour in more performance while also reducing the power consumption as well, which I think is going to be a really big difference compared to what we've seen with the Snapdragon 8 Gen 1 chipsets right now. While they perform really good, they still have a lot of throttling issues.
Yeah.
And this should solve a lot of that.
100%. So I'm looking forward to it, folks. And I'll let you know a little bit more about the X80 Pro once I play with it some more. Speaking of cameras and camera phones, I mentioned the Xperia 1 Mark IV earlier with its variable telephoto zoom. And Sony made a pretty bold claim last week. And
yeah.
I want to debate and discuss that with you a bit. They expect phone cameras to overtake DSLRs in terms of performance by 2024. Now, DSLRs are a pretty broad range of cameras. You know, there's some very affordable basic ones, and then it goes all the way to the sky's the limit. So what's your take on this? I mean, Sony makes these sensors no matter what. So it's pretty amazing that they would come out with the guns blazing like that.
Though, here's the thing. When they haven't clarified what they mean by DSLR, do they mean the traditional DSLR, or do they mean technically mirrorless cameras are a DSLR? But do they mean ones with a mirror in them, which is the traditional implication of what a professional camera is, and now we call them mirrorless cameras?
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking they're saying, if you look back at our lineup from 5 years ago when we switched to mirrorless, smartphones are going to compete with what we had 5 years ago in the DSLR space.
Yeah, because like the series of cameras that they no longer make, which are now called Alpha and something.
And the Canons and the Nikons and, you know, all those other...
The Rebels,
because Canon and Nikon were a little bit slower in getting onto the mirrorless, you know, bandwagon.
But even the Rebel, so, right? Whatever it is, the entry-level Canon one.
Yeah, so it really depends on what Sony's actually saying here, and they have not clarified. We're going to be better than DSLRs. I mean, we all know it's all about the overall chip size, right? Mm-hmm. Or the sensor size. And smartphones are not going to be able to match what you get on a mirrorless camera ever, unless you attach a mirrorless camera
to a smartphone. But I think this is what they're getting to. They're getting to the fact that they're going to be able to... Two things are going to happen. They're going to make better pixels, like in silicon, right?
Mm-hmm.
More sensitive pixels. And they're going to also make bigger sensors that... need less Z depth to work properly because of their geometry, and have optimized lenses that work with these sensors. So what I think they're talking about, some combination of hardware and silicon that, you know, kind of overcome some of the issues we're running into now, but still fit in a phone, probably a slightly chunky phone, like think Xiaomi Mi 11 Ultra or even that X80 mm-hmm. Pro from Vivo that I have. It's pretty, that camera bump is, or even the S22, you know, Ultra, I should say S21 Ultra last year, right? That chunky camera bump. And I think in that form factor, you can probably get something better if you had even better optics, like even more optimized optics, and then a sensor that somehow maybe isn't perfectly rectangular. Like you could make it so that it accommodates the fact that, you know, the Z depth is really short. I don't know. Maybe that's what they're doing.
Well, and so, but that's the thing.
They mount lenses on each pixel now, right? They mount lenses on each pixel to kind of like optimize that.
But that's the thing. They haven't clarified what they really meant by it. But all of the things you just said, you could technically take those and put them on a mirrorless camera and then slap on a $2,000 lens. And so then you're not outperforming that. So like the advances that you get on one end translate to the other end.
But it takes a while, right? Even when Sony land, it takes a while, especially in Nikon and Canon land, it takes a long time. They're barely doing computational stuff right now. Like, you know,
no, and so Sony is responsible for what I think like 45% of all smartphone camera sensors on the market.
Exactly.
So they completely own the segment. So there's no denying that. I'm just curious as to what the semantics of what they mean when they say DSLR, because when I hear DSLR, I'm thinking cameras from 5 years ago versus a brand new modern mirrorless camera. So, and in that aspect, I would say they've passed them now. I mean, with Sony's new smartphones with, you know, the variable, a true zoom lens with their periscope camera, a zoom lens that actually moves and you're getting different focal lengths with that sensor.
It's good.
We're going to be seeing a lot more of that. And I think, I don't know, smartphones are they've been getting interesting in the camera department for a while, but I think they're going to be more interesting in the coming years as well.
There it is, folks. For those of you watching on Patreon, remember, if you want to watch the video version of the podcast, you can subscribe to Patreon, patreon.com/TNKGRL, and get a special tier for that. I'll mention more about it in the end of the show. But yeah, that's the Xperia 1 Mark IV. And I have to say, I'm very impressed. It also has an AI hybrid digital zoom, when you get past the 5.2 optical, that for a 12 megapixel sensor is kind of doing some of that super zoom stuff, super res zoom stuff we've seen Google do, but from Sony this time.
Overlapping multiple shots.
And it's working. It's working very well. I'm seeing the kind of digital zoom in addition to the optical zoom that I'm used to seeing from like 48 and 64 megapixel sensors on a 12 megapixel sensor. Mind you, it's a really baller 12 megapixel. It's got large pixels and it's really nice. Like this camera system on paper is incredible. And frankly, it's not just on paper. You use it and it's good. It's just more, it's not, doesn't quite have the automation and the computational prowess that we're used to on even a Samsung or iPhone.
Yeah, Sony's used to delivering. They make incredible sensors and good cameras, but they say, here's the bare bones. You go take the picture you want with it, and they never dictate what that photo is going to look like. And we've seen in the smartphone space, people don't really want to put in that extra work into the editing. They just want to snap a photo and share it. And Sony needs to work a little bit on their computational photography algorithms just to catch
up. It's getting there. I'm seeing more. As I said, this AI zoom, it's a check, but it's not on by default. You have to go in the settings and turn it on. But look, I love the fact that Sony is spending money on making these super niche, bespoke, almost flagship that cost an arm and a leg, let's say, like this is $1,600 or something. Mm-hmm. Like it's ridiculous. But dude, this phone has everything. Wireless fast charging, wired fast charging. It's got a headphone jack. It's got like everything. 4K display.
4K video at 120 FPS.
Yes. It has a 4K display at 120 hertz variable like LTPO with super brightness too. It's got like 1,000 nits or something. It's just like, I'm sorry. Every time I use one of those Xperias, I'm just like, yeah, Sony. Yeah. It reminds me of my childhood when Sony was the best at everything.
Yeah. But it does bring us back to Sony of, you know, the 80s and early 90s, where they were on top of everything, but they were considered professional grade products versus consumer grade products.
Yeah, this
and
is prosumer.
That's what they're
right.
kind of, yeah. They're getting back to that. Like the price is that prosumer. Like you buy this phone because you are getting paid to take pictures with a smartphone, not because, oh, I want to take pictures of my kids.
Exactly.
Like there's a difference. There's a difference into it's a tool rather than, you know, just another smartphone.
Or you're a professional photographer and you use an alpha camera every day, like your big one. And when you're so used to that workflow that for your personal stuff, you still want that, I want a good camera everywhere I go. And, you know, you can still take pictures of your kid. It's not going to be as good as a Pixel, but you know what you're doing anyway. So it's probably going to come out okay.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, this is a topic I think you're going to be excited about. HTC has a new phone. Ta-da!
I want to smile and cry at the same time.
Tell us about it. Come on.
So we really don't know much about it, except for the fact that HTC announced that they will have a Viveverse phone coming later this month, or announced later this month, June 28th. They have a product announcement scheduled, or we're not sure if it's an announcement or a tease or what, but it's been what since 20
HTC 18? U12 no
the 12 U12 plus
right
was the last true flagship phone.
I put it in my collection library
and
I kept
just
that
for
one.
reference to nothing. That was a transparent phone. You could see the internal components of the phone.
Exactly.
Just to bring things full circle. I mean, that. So it's been 4 years since we've seen a flagship device from HTC. And I really don't know what to expect. Like, there's really not much to go off of. There were rumors a while back that HTC was going to launch something in the spring, and then supply chain issues kicked in again, and now it's been delayed till, you know, June 28th. We have no clue if it's going to be a global launch or Taiwan only. They've done a handful of mid-range devices over the last couple of years that were Taiwan only. Like, talk about a limited market. let's just focus on the island of Taiwan and release smartphones there.
It's amazing.
But yeah, it's if it is a true flagship device, I mean, for those who think back when the U12 Plus came out, it was technically extremely competitive to other devices on the market. HTC was doing really good things with its computational photography, with its cameras. The only downside was that they were still thinking that wireless charging was not a thing and decided not to include wireless charging
in smartphones. But then they had no real buttons on that phone either.
They had no real buttons on the phone, yeah.
So can I share something with you, Nick? This is exciting. Go for it. I was cleaning my office before doing this partial move to Canada. I still have my place in San Francisco, but I needed to clean up because some stuff needed to move up here, whatever. And it was crazy because I'm like, went like 198 phones I found. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I shipped a lot of them back to their original owners for those who wanted, but we donated a whole bunch. I mentioned that on a previous podcast to these charities, nonprofits in my area, shelters and stuff. But I kept a few, like I grabbed a few handpicked to put in the museum, right? Mm-hmm. And the one I found was the HTC U12 Plus. And get this, it wouldn't fire up. It was discharged. But I plugged it in for about 10 minutes and I held those capacitive buttons and it fired right up. And it was glorious. It was exactly where I'd left it. I backed up the photos because at the time I wasn't using Google Photos. I refactory reset it and I put it in the library. It is now one of the phones that I'm keeping. And I kept it because it's the last HTC phone, but now we have this. God damn it.
No, I'm really excited to see what it is. The fact that they're talking about the Viveverse makes me think that they're going to try to make it a VR something. My angst, for those who don't know, the reason I got into writing about smartphones was because I started a blog called HCC Source way back before Android was announced. So, I've been a huge fan of the HTC brand for years. Disappointed about that huge brand for more years than I was excited about them because they've been disappointing me for a lot of time. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what they bring to the table. I mean, there's a lot of interesting phones on the market right now. The one thing that HTC was not good at the last couple years it was on the market was not pricing its phones right and not having a clear marketing strategy. So if they can get those two things right, get the price right and get the marketing right, I think they can have a successful launch. I mean, there's so many, honestly, there's more brands now. Like HTC kind of bowed out saying, oh, it's too competitive in the market. And there's more brands now in the market delivering, you know, mid-range to high-end devices than there were 4 years ago. So it's even more competitive, which I think made them realize, you know, if these crazy brands, like there's a launch this week called, I think, from a brand called Techno.
Yeah, I got the email as well.
And I'm like, who the heck is Techno? Like,
Because Techno is like Infinix. They're like, they sell tons of really great affordable mid-rangers to Africa and other parts of the world.
To emerging markets. And I'm like, if Techno can have a launch event in New York City and get iJustine on stage, I mean, come on. Couldn't HTC do that too?
Yeah. You know, the way I see this phone is I expect a mid-ranger, a well-rounded mid-ranger that's basically leveraging the Vive branding and the Vive success and is also integrates really seamlessly with Vive as a controller. Because, for example, I don't know if you've used the all-in-one Vive, the really small and light one. I can't remember what it's called. It's the one that I wore in my article on TechRadar when I reviewed the VR in the car service thing. And they handed me an HTC 12 Plus as a controller to hold during my demo, right? It was like, it was basically using the capacitive screen as a touchpad inside the VR environment. So it became a controller to the Vive headset. And I'm thinking maybe they're going to have a tighter integration with lower latency for that kind of purpose and sensors that make the phone locate in the universe of the VR setting, you know? So the demo I did is a company called HoloRide, which is basically creating VR experience for passengers in cars. And they are using the HTC Vive Flow.
Oh, the Flow. Okay, yeah, yeah.
All right. And so there was an HTC U12 smartphone used as a controller for this in my demo. It was amazing. I was like, oh my God, I haven't seen one of those in so long. Anyway, I'm excited about it. That's basically all I'm going to say about this. So the next thing I want to talk about is the soap opera that's, you know, kind of the ongoing soap opera of the fan edition Samsung, will it come or will it not come? We had an entire 9-month soap opera last year of maybe we'll get an S21 FE. Oh, maybe we won't. Oh, maybe we will. Oh, look at that. You know, it just totally felt
like we got one.
We did get one in January 2022 when the S22 was already pretty much a thing. So now there's the same kind of drama, the same kind of reality TV unfolding here with the S22 fan edition. What's your initial take? Are you rolling your eyes and we don't care and it comes. If it doesn't come, it doesn't come? Because the rumor is that they're just going to completely abandon that fan edition.
So the whole reason why the original fan edition, the S21 FE, was a success was because of the price difference between it and the regular S series. There was, what, like a $250 gap between the prices of the phones. And that was because mainly the S21 was way overpriced.
True.
And they came in and said, hey, we have a phone that has a lot of the same things, but for $250 less or whatever the price was. And that really resonated with consumers because they said, we don't want to pay for that anymore. The S22 series came in significantly lower than its predecessors did at a lower price point. But then the S21 FE didn't match that price drop of the regular S series.
It was a lot harder
lineup
to justify. Yeah, 100%.
Well, no, it's impossible to justify. Like, it's literally, like, isn't it not even $100 difference?
It's true.
Between the phones. And when you consider that the regular S series is constantly on sale and they're giving away Galaxy Buds for free, you technically get a much better deal when you buy the regular Galaxy S22. And that's why the S21 FE is not selling well. When at the launch event there in Las Vegas, when we were there at CES for the S21 FE, I asked them, I was like, why did this not get a price drop? And their answer was, well, everyone loved the S20 FE last year at the same price, so we're keeping the same price. And I'm like, but you messed up the price of the higher phones and you adjusted that.
No, they didn't get it.
No, completely. They were just trying to get as much profits as possible. And because of that, you know,
it fell flat.
You get what you get.
Yeah.
So honestly, like with the prices of the main S series coming down, it really didn't feel like we needed the S21 FE, which means we kind of don't need the S22 FE as well. I don't know.
I think this is a great take. I agree with you. And also, I would add to the other data point is the A series is going up in range as well. There is some A series out there that are coming very close.
Yeah, the A73.
You know, like some of them don't have OIS yet. And that was definitely one of the nice things about the fan edition.
But that being said, the cameras, I did a camera comparison with the Pixel 6 and the A53.
And?
In more shots than I expected, the A53 came out ahead.
Wow. That's impressive.
It was incredible. I was not expecting it. I mean, the Pixel 6 does not have the same cameras all around as the 6 Pro. Just keep that in mind. There's the selfie camera is different on the 6 Pro. There's the extra zoom camera on the 6 Pro. So it wasn't that comparison. It was against the Pixel 6. And I was surprised. Samsung's mid-range A53 can compete with a Pixel 6 in photography.
That's impressive, especially in low light without the OIS.
And low light, that's where the Pixel 6 came out ahead. As far as clarity for the images go, but the Samsung device actually did better with the colors in low light than the Pixel.
Interesting.
And so, you know, with that being said, I was like, do we really need this this fan edition series when your mid-range devices have gotten so good. Like from the Galaxy A52 to the A53 this year, it was a big leap forward for a mid-range device.
Yep.
And for the price, like I think it's going to be a toss-up between the A53 and the Pixel 6a when the 6a makes it to market. So I would say the fan edition can be retired, in my opinion. I don't know. Like, I don't think there's enough space in the market there to slot the FE.
I agree,
in. 100%. Like, it's just not a wide enough gap now between the flagship tier and their mid-range.
Especially in a market like the US, where the FE was already kind of an oddball.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with you. I think this is exactly right. It's just not worth it anymore. Do you want to tell folks where they can find you on the internet, your social media handles and everything, Fandroid?
I sure can. Well, you can find me personally at Nick M. Gray, G-R-A-Y, on Instagram and Twitter. But all my work is over on Fandroid.com and YouTube.com/Fandroid.
Folks, go read Fandroid. It's awesome. I get a lot of my news there. And I run an entire website called Pocket Now now. So, speaking of which, check me out there. I'm going to be writing more there soon, but right now we're trying to restructure and reorganize things. So it's going to take a little while before you see me more regularly over there. And as you know, the podcast continues unchanged. My Twitter handle is at Tankgirl. That's T-N-K-G-R-L, like the comic book character without the vowels. And that's also my Instagram handle. So if you want to speak with Nick and me about this podcast, hit us up on Twitter. If you want to see pretty pictures of phones, pretty pictures taken with phones, pretty pictures taken with phones of cars, you should go to my Instagram. And of course, the podcast lives at mobiletechpodcast.com. We're on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Spotify, everywhere good podcasts can be found. Please rate and review the show on your app. If it lets you do that, that would really help. There's a couple of YouTube channels that go along with the podcast, youtube.com/mobiletechpodcast and youtube.com/mobiletechmore. They are complements visually to the podcast. You want to see some of the devices we discussed today? I'm going to have some videos there for you. And the More channel is kind of more peripheral, like car tech, travel tech, home tech. And then the main channel, Mobile Tech Podcast, is all about the phones and the immediate ecosystem. Personal audio, wearables, that kind of stuff. I also want to remind you of Patreon, patreon.com/tankgirl or patreon.com/TNKGRL, just like my Twitter handle. If you want to help support the show, consider joining Patreon. We have a bunch of tiers there, including one for a Discord server you can join to chat with me if you want. And then we have the video version, of course, of the podcast, which is exclusive to the patrons and happens a day or so before. So you get to see the show a little bit more raw, less edited, more real, with some visuals to go along. So consider Patreon. I would love your support. And if you don't like using Patreon, I totally get it. There is also a way to help with a PayPal link. Buy me a coffee. Click through the link in the show notes. And, I'd appreciate it. I love my coffee. There's my cup for today. The next thing I want to do is thank our sponsor. Audible's been with us forever and they've been sponsoring the show and we love them. They have a special deal for you and it's audibletrial.com/mobiletech. That's audibletrial.com/mobiletech. If you want to join Audible and get a 30-day free trial and keep a book at the end, whether you stay or not, that's your deal. But look, I'm not going to tell you to do this because it's pretty obvious. Like, if you love books and you're not already on Audible, you should join and use that link because they're an incredible platform for audiobooks. I'm in front of my computer all day and my eyes get tired and I love books, but reading at the end of the day, it's hard. So what I do instead is I fire up Audible, listen to a book. It's read to me. I chill out. I close my eyes. I lie back in my recliner, earbuds, headphones. I just immerse myself. It's wonderful. They have a wide selection of books. You get some read by the authors. Some of them are short stories. You get some podcasts to choose from. It's just great. It's also great for road trips. If you want to listen to a book while driving, it's just a great way to pass the time. So folks, consider joining Audible. Audibletrial.com/mobiletech is the URL. I hope you check it out and help us out. And I want to thank Audible again for being our longtime sponsor. And of course, I want to thank you, Nick, for being my guest on the show for the 1,000,000th time, I think. But it's always awesome to have you.
My pleasure. It's always fun being on. You know me, I always love talking about smartphones.
Definitely. And we'll have you on again because of that. And folks, you know we'll have another show next week. So stay tuned for that. Until then, cheers, everybody.
This has been the Mobile Tech Podcast with Tank Girl, proudly presented by worldpodcasts.com. You can visit us online at mobiletechpodcast.com.